You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Back with Dr. Jack Brown talking about body language, emotional intelligence, and what to be looking out for in the individuals that we interact with on a daily basis, or maybe just observe on our phones or television screens. What one of the things I was curious about, and I know you did not watch the trial, but there was a lot of interesting moments where you had slight nodding going on of a head, almost. And when you're looking at it, you're going, "Is this person, you know, nodding like, oh my goodness, this is something horrible that they're, you know, they've accepted happened, not necessarily that they did it, but they are like, that's bad." Or can nodding, like just ever so slight nodding, almost sometimes looking like it's not even controllable. Is that more of a sign of, you know, I already know this information that I'm being accused of? Or is that kind of something that is kind of case by case?
Yeah, you touched on it at the very last there, accurately. It really, there's so many variables that you have to take it a case-by-case basis. There are often cited examples where people say yes, but they're nodding their head no, or nodding their head or waving their head side to side no.
Sure.
And but saying yes. So in some area, some areas of the world, that is, the nodding and the head side to side are reversed, but with that is an exception. And there's not a lot of places, but there are some places in the world where that is important to know. So with that aside, yes, sometimes, but that comes more when people are making a statement or they're being asked a question, in more of a deliberate question. So, but there are, other examples where we can misinterpret that, where there's something called a self-righteous head wiggle. And that can be misinterpreted as a no, but really there's a self-righteousness or a strong affirmation of an idea or a thought or an experience. And that can be often misinterpreted as a no, and there are nuances there. You know, if we had visual examples, I could show you some of those, and that is often a mistake. So, yeah, with the head nodding, it can be misinterpreted, but and that's where you know, open-ended questions and closed-ended questions. If you're asking someone, if you're asking someone questions, if you're trying to catch them in a lie or you suspect them of a lie, you know, one thing you want to do is you want to ask them open-ended questions.
Uh-huh.
So you use the Socratic method. You don't give them the easy out or the yes or no. But having said that, when you ask people yes or no questions, or in once in a while you have to, and you should, they often won't ask that. A great example, I've heard this some whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
Are you having an affair? When would I have time to have an affair?
Uh-huh.
Now, so they ask a rhetorical question like that, and often with that sarcastic voice and the loud, you know. And they're not answering the question. And politicians are particularly good at this, and you know, of all stripes, but plenty of other people are too. And so a lot of people, well-meaning and really good people, ethical people, are kind of raised in a home where that becomes a habit when they're an adult. And so a lot of people have this as a habit. They don't answer questions directly. That doesn't mean they're bad people, but you know, it's just kind of like a habit. And some people are verbose, or they tend to, it's better to give a summary, a short summary. This is one thing politicians don't do. You ask someone a question, give them and especially with experts, you give or someone that's really learned, they give this long answer. No one, everyone gets all lost, and you say, okay, in a nutshell, it's yes or no. And let me explain why. How much time do you have? And you go into, so you give the short answer first, And so often we, if we want to be clear communicators, that's so important. And people appreciate that. And it's also just good communication. Doctors and attorneys are awful at that. And we understand that everything isn't a yes or no answer. And so we want to say, but there is an in-between. And let me explain it to you, because there's an important in-between. And then you give the nuance afterwards. But it's important to summarize at first. When you're asking someone, though, when you're suspecting them of a deception and you ask them a question, very often it's things like that. You know, are you having an affair? When would I have time to have an affair? And they get very good at not answering the question directly. I'm sorry, sir. That's not what I asked you. Could you please answer the question? X, Y, Z, and hold it to them. And a lot of our journalists aren't good at doing that. So we see this all the time on the news. But this is true in the everyday. This is true in the everyday. And sometimes people are just not good listeners. So sometimes I take the onus on myself and I say, hey, let me just ask that a slightly different way, because I want to be sure I understand. So I'll rephrase it and put the onus on me. And I'll rephrase it in a different way. But I'll hold it to them. I'll hold their feet to the fire. And it's interesting, too, how people will just out themselves. If you also just give them some dead air, give them enough room sure. to hang themselves. Yeah. And so a lot of people, feel very, very emotionally uncomfortable with that dead air, especially if they are a person who is deceiving us. If they're not being the deceiver, if they're not guilty of deceit and lying, then they're not going to be anywhere near as comfortable. And okay, I'll let it hang there, right? Let the dead air be dead air. And sure. And you observe their comfort in that moment. And very often the people who are being deceptive will say something incriminating, and sometimes they'll just come out and say, "Yeah, I did it," or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or they'll rationalize it in a way that makes clear that they're leaning in of some kind of semi confession in that direction. Well, I had to do it because, et cetera.
When you're in a situation and you're talking to someone and having a conversation about whatever misdeeds they may have done, and you're able to read some of these tells off of them, and you can tell there's some lies going on. Do you ever confront someone at that moment in time when those tells are coming out where, well, you just told me this, but your body is telling me this, which is the opposite of what you just said? Would you like to rephrase what you said, or would you like to correct anything that you have just told us? Does that sometimes encourage more honest communication, or do people tend to dig in more when confronted with some of these nonverbal cues that they may not even be aware of that they're giving?
Yeah, I don't recommend doing that, and I essentially never do it. Because what you don't want to, you want to play a little bit, so I'm kind of dating myself here, but Columbo, everyone knows that. Yeah. Maybe the Columbo metaphor, where you kind of play a little bit. I'm not saying play dumb the way he did it, but he really kind of played dumb. But you don't want to give your hand away. And also, you're right in that when you do confront people in general, sometimes almost all the time, they'll dig their heels in, and they'll get angry. And if you were getting someplace with the discussion, that ceased, and you won't make any more headway there. So I almost all the time use my knowledge that I gained in that moment to approach from a different angle. And again, maybe do a little bit of the Columbo thing, but not too much. But just ask them from a different angle and do your best to be neutral on your face, to not look like you have any accusations in your words, in your tone, or in your own body language. As you become better at reading other people's body language, you become more self-aware of your own body language. And both of those are important. And, some professions, they only want to learn, okay, how do I use my body? Like actors are.
Sure.
Are like that. Some attorneys are like that, but a lot of attorneys want to be able to read the other person. Hey, I want to tell if that person's lying. But both are important. And when you learn one, you will learn the other. I almost never confront them, because they will just dig their heels in. And as they get, if you ask someone a question and they get angry, there are exceptions to this, which is you can ask someone too many times or in front of people. You don't want to maybe do it in front of people. You want to, if you're confronting someone, you want to do it in private. Criticize in private and praise in public. And so one form of criticism is accusation, or at least leading in that direction. You may not be in accusing someone yet, but if you're asking them about something that went on, you maybe want to do that in private. But if people with the insinuation of doing something dishonest or lying, if they get angry, that anger it's got a very high correlation with deception. Someone's accusing you of cheating, if you get angry right away, that person, now it's one thing, maybe you've accused them like 500 times and they said 500 times, no, I'm not. Mm-hmm. But if their immediate response upon being confronted with a bad behavior or a lie is anger, there's a real good chance they are guilty of that. They are guilty of that. So, what are some other things? So, if someone does a finger point hand chop, if you're accusing them or they're defending themselves from an alleged ill deed or a deception, mm-hmm. and they're pointing their finger at you and they're chopping like mm-hmm. that, I did not do this. I mm-hmm. did not steal the money. I did not have an affair. And they're pointing their finger at you and they're chopping up and down. Mm-hmm. When you're using that particular body language in defense of an accusation or leaning in that direction, you're almost always guilty of that.
Interesting.
And and you often see it with the non-dominant hand. So let's say I was guilty of doing something. So I'm right-handed. So that person's going to tend to use their left hand. Well, if they really meant what they said, they would be using the right hand because it's their dominant hand. Very mm-hmm. often when people do this, they'll use the non-dominant hand. Why? Because they don't really feel what they're saying. They don't. It's not really there. But let's say they are using their dominant hand. That's still got a very high correlation with deception. So the finger point hand chop upon being accused of a deception or an ill deed, that's got a real high correlation with the lie.
Oh, interesting.
Another thing is, distancing language, the distancing language that people will say, let's say someone accuses someone of having an affair and this her name is, say, Sue. Mm-hmm. Well, I know her name is Sue, but I might use the name Miss Smith. Uh-huh. Why didn't I use the name Sue? We both know her name Sue. And if I'm using the name Miss Smith, that's distancing. Like I'm trying to distance her. Well, an innocent person wouldn't do that. No, I didn't have an affair with Sue. You know Sue and I know Sue. Go ask Sue. I didn't have an affair with her. And so the guilty person would say Miss Smith or Ms. Smith. If they say Miss Smith, they're even more guilty. So it's just we've been using the word Ms. for 40 years now. That's important too. The other thing is, I just gave in that example when I was doing the innocent person role playing there. I didn't have an affair. I didn't. So when the innocent person tends to use a contraction, whereas the guilty person say, "I did not sleep with Sue."
Uh-huh.
So they'll use the non contraction is more consistent with deception. The contraction didn't is more consistent with truth telling.
Let me ask you this one. What about when an individual is being confronted about something and they suddenly start talking about them in very almost nickname fashion and consistently, when in the past they never, or maybe they had here and there, but it wasn't like every time this person's name is mentioned, you're getting the nickname of that person.
In a general sense, that's false intimacy. Mm-hmm. One example I think of a lot, you can see a lot, is people using Benjamin Netanyahu's name, so the prime minister of Israel, multiple times, and they call him Bibi.
Yeah.
Yeah, BB and I, we went out for drinks at the country club. BB, BB, right? Yeah. We all call him BB. That's an endearing name. No, we don't call him that. We call him Mr. Netanyahu, or President Netanyahu. And so you hear people use that name, it's a false sense, it's false intimacy, mm-hmm. false intimacy. What can we do for you today? Well, that's false teaming. Why do I use we when I just met you?
Uh-huh.
Why are we using we? I just met you. You're not we. I'm not on your team. So beware of people that have that false teaming, but the false intimacy too. And so when they touch you, there are a lot of men who don't think themselves to be misogynistic. There's also a lot of straight men that do this to other men. So it's not necessarily a sexual thing, but it's a dominant thing. Although it could be also both. It could be a sexual, misogynistic sexuality kind of a thing, but also a dominant kind of a thing. And that is when I help you through the doorway. Well, I'm an adult. I can walk through the door. You don't need to put your hand on the small of my back or on the upper part of my back to help me through the door. You know, if I was your grandmother, maybe then you can do it.
Sure.
But if I was someone else's grandmother, you still shouldn't do it, even though I might need a little bit of help mm-hmm. unless they start falling. You know, so when people do it there's a false intimacy with body language. But yeah, people use false intimacy with words and false intimacy with tone. Oh, honey, we shouldn't do that. Wait a second.
Sure.
Don't call me honey. And what's up with this soft, you know, what's up with this tone of voice?
Yeah.
So we have, there's false intimacy in body language, false intimacy in words, and false intimacy in tone of voice too. So all those things, beware of a person that does that because they're trying to get you in their collective. They're trying to, that those are all manipulative techniques where people try and manipulate you and make you feel like you're one of them. Politicians who point to people in the audience and say, hey, you're on my team. Hey, they don't know who they're pointing to. But and then when millions of people look at that politician who's pointing, we feel that it's kind of us, even directly. Even if we don't like the person, we still feel a little bit like that. Why are you pointing and smiling at me? Now, but most of the time, we shouldn't point at all. So, you know, beware of when people point with the index finger, or some countries they call it the forefinger. Mm-hmm. That's almost always taken negatively. And, that's something that you want to watch. That's an aggressive person that points a lot. And they may not be lying right there, but that's a warning sign that person might be more manipulative or aggressive. And they might even use a pen to do it. I invite everyone, all your listeners, to point with a pen or a pencil as a surrogate instead of their forefinger. And some journalists do this. And then just do this experiment. It's hard to have that angry face because if you're pointing, what's mirrored in the hand tends to be what's performed in the hand tends to be mirrored in the face. So if there's tension in the hand, there's going to be tension in the face. If you turn the pen around with the clicky end or the non-writing end or the eraser end of the pencil, and you point with that end, the face will soften up. And it's funky how that happens. It happens. It's like super reliable. And so you're still pointing with the surrogate, but you're pointing with the non-business end of it. So that softens it mm-hmm. up. But be careful of people who point a lot with the surrogates, you know, pens and pencils in their hand. Because they're often a person who's got narcissistic qualities who will want you to sit down and listen. Anytime they are looking like they're listening, it's never to understand. It's usually just to get you to shut up so they can say what they're going to say next. So part of body language, of course, is not only detecting who's lying, who might be telling the truth, but to maybe even go one step further. And okay, I don't want to work for that person, or I want that person to work for me, or I don't want to date that person, or I don't want to be next door neighbors to that person, or I don't want that person maybe cutting my lawn even, because you want to distance yourself from people. Not that everyone's evil, but you want to be able to see these things ahead of time so you can distance yourself from that person. And the person might be two or three cubicles down at the office, but at least you know you never want to carpool with him or her or be alone very often with that person. So you might not be able to fire that person or go to a different place of employment, but at least you know you should keep that person at arm's length and maybe keep your radar up a little higher when you're around that person. So, you know, not everything is black and white. You want to see warning signs before they happen.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Dr. Jack Brown, thank you so much for your insight into body language and emotional intelligence today. We will have him back on when we're looking specifically at some of the language within some of the cases that we're following for you. I'm very excited to talk to him about some of the Daybell body language, the Brian Walsh body language. There's all those cases that we're covering that are coming up very soon. So thank you, Jack, for that that insight. His website, bodylanguagesuccess.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. You get an ad-free version of the podcast wherever you download podcasts, specifically over at Apple Podcasts, where you can get the ad-free one. You can sign up for even 3 days to try it for free. Check that out and help support the program. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.